This is the audit committee calling it order. Somebody's got a lot of wind in the background. Can you please mute your microphone? Calling this meeting to order at 8:37. Madam Secretary, can you please call the roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Grace Adams.
Here.
Elena Castelli here. Elaine Duncan.
I also received a message from her that she was in a car accident last week and isn't feeling very well, so she won't be here tonight.
Simon Gomez?
Here.
Thank you. Julie Hewitt?
Present.
Ken Lawford?
Here.
Adrienne LaViolette?
Here.
Serene Roberts? Aileen Rosen?
Here.
James Agaton?
Here.
Carol Travis, absent. Paulina Vasiliev?
Presente.
Martina Washington? Okay, Madam Chair, we have 3, 6, 9 members. We have quorum.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Okay, we need some timekeepers for tonight. Do I have any volunteers?
I can do it, Eileen. It's Adrienne.
Adrienne, thank you. Can I ask you to, you know, keep people more or less, you know, within a 3-minute limit at the most? 1 minute for asking questions, 3 minutes for comments, and just watch our overall time from getting too far away from things, okay?
Yeah, so 1 minute for questions, 3 minutes for comments.
Yeah, if that seems okay. You know, don't have to be to the second, but something like that. All right, and it appears that we will have to strike number 3, approval of the draft minutes, because we don't have them today. That'll go till next time. Other than that, shall we read over the agenda, or can we just approve it or discuss
please,
it?
Madam Chair, Diana,
yes.
Maybe if you read it for the stream, then the people know what our agenda is.
Sure. Okay, the first substantive point is updates from the chair and or other committee members for a total of 15 minutes. I've got one point there that is progress on the general audit and the committee's role in it. And then I just left room for what else if other people have other items. Point 5 is a call-in by Brad Guy, who is the accountant on our retirement plans. He's calling in at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. I've left 30 minutes for that. I asked him to give us a little presentation, a review of the 403B audit final draft, and then we can ask him any other questions on the pension audits. Then if we need to, we can return to talking about the general audit and anything we have on any other questions among ourselves on the 403B audit. The next point is to take up a motion that was sent out by Grace Aaron earlier today, which we'll read when we get to that point. And that's it. After that, action items and any other new business, and select the next meeting date and adjourn. Can we approve this agenda, or does anyone have any comments or changes?
I have a question, Madam Chair, Eugene.
Yes, go ahead.
I know that we have it for executive session, but are we talking about the document from NIDA, the part that we can talk or not? Because
if anybody is prepared to talk about, you know, open items there, that would be fine. We can put that under after the general audit. Otherwise, we can
because that will open clearly the way to Ms. Aaron's motion.
Okay.
Because
I am going to put it in, guys. I'm not very comfortable with this. Okay.
Eileen, I'd like to add a motion to excuse Carol's absence.
Yes, let's do that.
This is Grace. Can I speak to that?
Yes, Grace.
I guess we could do that, but actually there is some rule that was passed a number of years ago in the Governance Committee that said that there are no excused absences in committees, that if there are two absences, that it's up to the chair or the secretary to notify the person that if they don't attend the next meeting, they will be removed from the committee. Now, it might be good to keep that in place as when you have people who are absent from the committee, it makes it difficult sometimes to reach quorum. The other thing that I wanted to say about this is Carol Travis is a director on the national board. The directors on the committees are chosen by the national board, not the local board. So she could theoretically be replaced by another director from KPFA. It's a complicated situation, but she could theoretically be replaced by somebody else from KPFA if it were voted on by the national board. But let's just hope that she recovers from whatever problem she's having health-wise.
Right. Why don't we see how she's doing another meeting or two from now?
Yes.
How's that? Adriana, could you note, Adriana, would you kindly note to check in on Carol after the next meeting if she doesn't show up?
Yes.
If she doesn't return?
Because,
great.
Because like Grace, Ms. Aaron said, that's why we don't excuse in committees, because it's true. I mean, we can't replace the people, and it's difficult to reach quorum, and we need the work of the committees to recommend to the PMB. That's why if people cannot work in the committee, that's fine. I mean, it's not any problem, but that's why we don't, it's not the excuse, it doesn't work. Okay? Thank you.
Understood. Okay.
I will talk to her and to the LSP.
Okay, give her a little time. She needs to rest. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. All right, and Adrian, thank you for that suggestion. I think we'll just see how things look at the next meeting. Okay. Let's move on, if we've got nothing else, before updates from the chair. Just very briefly, I've been in contact with the auditors, with Scott, and also with the NETA people. I did find out that they prefer to be called NETA and not NETA. So I'll try to remember that, NETA. I'm not sure I'm utterly clear on this because they say sometimes that it's hard to get things, but yet they're making progress. I know that there have been meetings. I know that George and Larry, I think, have been in on weekly coordination meetings. Maybe Anita was there too from NETA, and with all the GMs and or business managers. And everybody says they're making progress, but they also say they're not quite getting what they need. So I'm sorry that I'm not utterly clear about that, but I imagine things will become clearer as the days go by. Adriana, this is where maybe the NETA document comes in.
Yes.
Do you want to pull out the main points there, or does someone else want to do that?
Madam Chair, this is Grace. For
the yes, Grace.
Go
ahead, Grace.
Yes. I'd like to say that the September 18th meeting of the National Finance Committee, Anita from NETA was in that meeting, and she explained the lack of response at times in getting information from the stations. And that was an open session, so it's a little easier to talk about that. But
okay, if you would be kind enough to, yeah.
I'm sorry, can Grace's sound be turned up? I can barely hear her. I'm sorry.
Okay. Is that better? Is
little
that
bit.
Any better?
I hear you a little better now, yeah.
Okay. I in the motion that I sent out, there's a link to that meeting, and Anita starts talking at about 11 minutes into the meeting. But anyway, she explains the situation and some of the deficiencies in reporting, getting information from the various stations. But I guess we could go over some points that were in the report, the written report from NETA, but the information is also in that open session of the National Finance Committee.
Great. Would any of you feel prepared to go over that a little bit, to pull out some of those points? I read this through once today, but didn't really organize, the info.
Paulina, request for information?
Yes, Paulina.
Which PND directors are on the Finance Committee currently?
On the Finance Committee?
Yes.
I don't know.
Joseph Davis?
Sorry?
One more time?
Joseph Davis. There's a way to find that out, and that is to go to kpftx.org.
Right.
And if you go on the monthly view and you find a National Finance Committee meeting.
Uh-huh.
Are any members of this committee, the Audit Committee, also on the Finance Committee?
No, you're not allowed to be on both those committees.
Okay. Thank you. That was all. Just making sure. Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay. Grace, were you going to give some updates or points, main points from this document? I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
Okay. Sure, I can. First of all, neither WPFW nor WBAI has a business manager. There's a part-time person at WPFW, and the GM at WBAI inputs some of the information, but neither one of them are inputting the information to Great Plains, which is our accounting software. Some of the information is being input by the business manager at KPFK, who's doing some of the accounting work for those two stations. So that's a gross deficiency at those two stations. And I believe there is some lack of data entry on the part of this business manager at KPFA into Great Plains. A lot of information was not, some information was not input into Great Plains, our accounting software, by KPFA. So that's a deficiency as well. KPFK, I think, is okay because we do have a business manager. And KPFT, at some stations, what's happening is there is one person in charge of everything, which doesn't – so there's not – that's a lack of accountability. In other words, there needs to be checks and balances so that there's more than one person who oversees the financial information. just a bad business practice to have only one person depositing checks, writing checks, and doing everything. So that's a deficiency at several stations. So, but basically, I believe that Nita suggested that they can take over, they can charge the stations and take over their local accounting for a certain amount of money, which might be a good idea because it's been quite a while that WBAI has not, and WPFW, two of the stations, have gotten their financial information input into the national accounting software.
Great.
Adriana?
Go ahead, Adriana.
Yes, sorry, two things. To answer Paulina, the PMB that they're in finance, Joseph Davis for KPFT, Chris Corey from KPFA, William Hill Warren for WBAI, Mansoor Sabat for KPFK, and Tony Leon for WPFW. But it's some important thing, too. I mean, the finance committee doesn't have representation from, I mean, the finance committee is one director and the treasurer. Again, in the finance committee, we don't have the treasurer from KPFA because it's the same situation. They already they are not following up not only the PMB directives, but the court directives, and we don't have representation there neither. Something that Grace said that is absolutely true is the deficiency in the oversight of the cash receipt and all of that. And when I see the report, I believe that we sent the report from the audit from 2013, 2014, because there the deficiency is very clear. And it's not only what is in the last audit, it's on the previous audit. And like Gray said, it's really a problem when you cannot have the proper controls in what is being accounting and all the, like Grace said, we know that in KPFA is a problem that was that the NETA person, Anita, said that she, in some station, we don't have the information. I mean, it's really, really a big problem because it's, you know, even the control of the accounts, we know that. We know that the PMB passed a motion in March in the signatures of the accounts, but some stations, like KPFA is one example, refused to accept one of the signatures that the PMB passed. And we have even people that left the foundation that are still being signatures in accounts with 26 bank accounts. We need to tackle that because it's really, like Ray said, it's a really, really big, big, big problem from the foundation.
Yeah, I'm putting myself on the stack here. I don't think there's anybody else. I could speak to a few of these things. WPFW, as far as I know, and I was in on a meeting and I've asked how it's going, we're definitely going to have NETA take on our bookkeeping. And the money, I'm not sure how much it's going to cost compared to what we've been paying our fellow in Los Angeles to do our books. But, you know, if we're not paying Los Angeles anymore, that'll help us defray the costs. So that'll be great. Because I expect it to be a pretty economical solution because, you know, it'll mean less work all around because they'll be so familiar with it that when it comes to audit time, they will have already put those numbers together, et cetera. So I'm looking forward to that. The hard part is just coding things the right way, making sure they know what all our expenses and our income are for. But Barry doesn't even really know that now. So we get a lot of things lumped into the same line items that shouldn't be, things like that. So I think it'll be great. I think that NETA is expecting to take on WBAI as well, but I have no idea if people have been discussing that already. So I don't know.
Paulina,
that much. Go ahead, Paulina.
My question is, if we as foundation are considering designating the duties taking care of the books to a third party, NETA in this case, whose purview is it? Who are the people who are negotiating how much, you know, what the charges would be, and also whether it would be for only some sister stations or for all five stations? It just seems like a very important decision that needs to be made in the most transparent manner possible. I don't know who can speak to that.
I'll try. I think, each station will be aware of its needs. If it needs that kind of help, I know that PFW definitely does, and it can be NETA or it could be somebody else. We had some other external accounting help last year, but I think everybody, not just me, people at the station also thought it would just be more efficient and less difficult to have NETA take on our bookkeeping for us. And then they could do all our reports and our audit prep and, you know, we're done. So I don't know. Presumably, the ED, our new ED, I guess, whoever that is, and if and when he, she, I think it's a, I've heard it's a he, but I don't know for sure, comes on board, they're going to have to take that up. I'm not sure if this responsibility falls to the PNB or the ED or how that's all going to work out. But another thing I forgot to mention, is that as I wrote in my note near under the agenda, Larry Danker from NETA will also be working on writing up processes and procedures, rules and things for everybody to follow so that, we can start having a greater consistency in what is happening among the various stations. And I believe I saw somebody else sign in. Is that Brad Guy?
Yes, it is. Hello. Good evening.
Hi, Brad. How are you? Welcome
Very
to
well.
Our meeting. So everybody, Brad Guy is the lead auditor on our pension audits, and you've all received a copy of the draft 403B pension audit, and I asked Brad to give us, to walk us through it a little bit, and so he's here to do that. Now we can ask him questions about that or, the other audits as well. Okay,
Very
Brad,
good.
It's you're on.
All right, thank you. All right, well, if you have the financial statements, I'll be happy to walk through the statements with you, or if you'd prefer, I'll just give you a large overview. But I'm looking at the draft of the financial statements, and I'm turning the page. I'm going past the table of contents and turning to the auditor's report. I'm not sure if, the experience level of all of the audit committee. But with retirement plan audits, if you have a qualified a custodian for the plan assets, you're able to do what's called a limited scope audit. So it's you can rely on the fact that, in this case, Voya is audited and they're very regulated. And so we don't, as auditors, we're not required, well, when the plan sponsor says this is the kind of audit we want, that the auditor is not required to actually vouch, individual investments, and because we're going to rely on what Voya is giving us. They're audited, they're regulated, and the Department of Labor finds this as an acceptable practice. These audited financial statements are being presented with the Form 5500. That is the main motivation for preparing an audit, is that when you have a large plan, you have to file an audited financial statement with the 5500. And so they accept the limited scope audit. That's what this is. And so the report will say this is we disclaim an opinion as to the information which is provided by Voya, because that's the arrangement for a limited scope audit. Now, as to all other aspects related to the plan, we are auditing. So Voya is relying on the information that they get from the plan sponsor, and it's our responsibility then as auditors to test the information and review that information to make sure that the Voya is getting accurate information, so that way, you know, they can account for what they do at their end, but they are relying on the information that they're given. I'm now turning the page and going to page 4, which is the statement of net assets available for benefits. Basically, it lists the investments at fair value. At the top, that's the bulk of the assets. And then moving down the page, there are some receivables. There's an employer match receivable and a 403B, employer 403B item. Well, I guess in the current year, which is 2016, the 403B item is $48,153. Now, this was the first year that the audit was required, because the plan was not considered a large plan until 2016. The Department of Labor, with the Form 5500, like to see a comparative balance sheet, so that we presented the December 31, 2015 balance sheet, or the, should call it the Statement of Net Assets Available for Benefits. I apologize for mixing up my terminology. We calculated an amount due at December 31, 2015 of $34,000 as due to the 403B plan, with an additional amount added to that to create that $48,153. And I wanted to, even though this isn't a large dollar amount in terms of the whole plan, I did want to explain this particular issue. The plan sponsor was providing a match for employees who are participating in putting money into the 403B plan. But in addition to that, the plan had been amended, or not amended, but as part of the plan document, there is a contribution that was required under basically a collective bargaining agreement for one of the stations. And that contribution was at one point 1%, and then later on it was 1.5%. But that contribution had not been made. And so we calculated an amount of accrued contributions that went back to, I think, January 1, 2013. From 2013 to 2015, we accrued the amount of $34,000. That's just a rounded estimate. We don't really have an accurate, you know, a perfectly accurate number, because a perfectly accurate number would require, and the plan sponsor should still do this, go back, look at their actual employees, their wages, and calculate that 1% that was due but never paid into the plan for those members of that particular station. And then, and this was required, whether this is not a match. So this was just a required contribution. So that's why it wasn't picked up. All the amounts that were required a match, the plan sponsor was doing a good job on that. So employees participated in the plan, they contributed, the employer matched it, and that all went well. But when it came to this particular additional amount, was not based on a match, then that's where the error happened, and that's where the accrual has taken place. And so that's my explanation for that. So there's a couple of years that someone at the plan sponsor should go back and do a more accurate computation so that funds can be put in on an individual basis, because that's the way it has to be accounted for, individually. The next page, page 5, is the statement of changes in net assets available for benefits. And it's, I think, pretty straightforward. You know, we have investment income at the top, followed by some contributions, and broken down between what is from the employee or the plan participant, what comes from the employer, which is the match, or the other amount that would otherwise be due because of that one due for the one station under the collective bargaining agreement. And then a rollover contribution is in there. Then distributions represent the deductions from the plan assets, and there was a net increase for the year 2016 of $272,000 increasing the plan assets from just under $3 million to just over $3 million. And following that are the notes to the financial statement. I won't, with fairly standard note disclosures, which audited financial statements typically have, especially obviously these are tailored to an employee benefit plan and a defined contribution employee benefit plan. But I won't, there's nothing in here that I can think of to go over in specifically. But if anyone has a question about note disclosures, I'm happy to delve into those in a little more detail. And then the last disclosure, note 12, I'm on page 13. That's just a reconciliation that's required. Between what the information that's on the Form 5500 and the information that's on the audited financial statement. And so the DOL requires a reconciliation, so that's what that represents. Following that is a detailed listing on page 50. Yes?
Yeah, this is, I have several questions, but this was one I really didn't understand. Where do these differences come from?
Well,
and what needs to happen with them?
Well, it's not unusual that the Form 5500 is prepared oftentimes without any accruals, because the entity that's preparing the 5500 is oftentimes the same entity that's the custodian, in which case.
Mm-hmm.
They are just dealing with mostly a cash basis of activity. They know the contributions they've received. They know the investment income that's been earned, and they know the assets that are sitting there in the plan. And that's the way they prepare the 5500. They don't concern themselves with whether or not the employer may have had funds withheld from employees in the last payroll of the year, and it didn't get put into the plan until the first week in the following year. That's an accrual. So for the audit, we accrue that. But the the custodian or the person, the entities preparing the 5500, they don't concern themselves with that. So that's why the typical reconciling items and the items that you see on this page are really accrual items. They're receivables.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's...
Okay.
That's why there's a difference.
Okay, but is the 5500 going to be, has Voya already submitted it to the IRS?
I suspect
to be amended?
I suspect they submitted this 5500 back in October of 2017, because that's when this one was due.
Okay, but will we file an amended 5500 once we finish the audit, get the final version of the audit? Is that
I would imagine that they will. Yes, I would imagine that they'll file a supplemental report return, yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Paulina, I have a question to the same issue.
Go ahead, Paulina.
to Brad. So when would that payment be made, and is it possible to disclose in open session which station owes those payments?
Well, I don't have any problem saying which station had the collective bargaining agreement. That was KPFK. Now, the remittance of the funds that are due, that would be done as soon as the plan sponsor can identify specifically which employee is due with how much money. And, you know, all the records are there because they're payroll records. They just have to go through the process and have the resources to do that.
Do they have a timeline for that? Do they have a due date?
Well, yes. I mean, the funds were due. Well, no, I should take that back. These funds were not withheld from employees. So when funds are withheld from employees, they definitely have a timeline, time deadline. They have to be put in the plan fairly quickly, you know, within days typically. When the employer owes the money, there's an expectation that it'll be paid within a reasonable amount of time, but it's typically the due date of the tax return. So October 17th or 15th, 2017 would have been the typical due date for making that payment.
Thank you.
I think I have a comment on that, and correct me if I'm wrong. I understand that the negotiations between the union and KPFK have been going pretty well and are coming to kind of their end, I guess. And apparently KPFK has about $100,000 in hand that it can put into the plan right away and would need to, apparently the union is amenable to them paying the rest over, you know, another few months or something like that. That's what I've heard, and I think that's, you know, that's the situation. So it looks like they're about to be wrapped up there. Then I understand the next big project is KPFA, but I can't speak to how that's looking or if that's made any progress. Brad, you can go on.
Well, I think I pretty much reached the end I was on the last page of the last two pages.
I see
the
that
plan, mm-hmm. which just, you know, gives you a detailed list of all of the investments that the plan holds. Of course, the participants direct their investments, so that basically it's the responsibility of the plan sponsor to kind of monitor the investments just to see that they're offering good, investments that are performing pretty well. They don't have to be always at the top of the market, but if there's somebody, investments that are performing really poorly in the market compared to their peers, then typically the advisory committee to the plan will, replace those with other, alternative investments which are in the same field, but just performing better, so that the plan participants are not stuck with just limited choices of plan options. You know, one other side note I might make is that you have a very long list of investment choices here, and I'm not sure why there's so many. Typically, we'll see all the investments will fit on one page, and you've got two pages, so you have, I would say, basically twice as many investment choices as the typical plan that we audit. Now, that's not necessarily bad, but there's some, you know, different people will have different theories about that.
Sure. Question there then. So Voya, they don't do any investing, right? They just are basically holding, administering the funds?
That is correct. The participants make their own choices.
Oh, they do. Okay. So,
right. It's a self-directed, but it's self-directed choices available within the choices available to them.
Right. Okay. I think we will be revisiting all that as soon as we get
everything kind of straightened out for the two plants, then we can, you know, start improving things.
This is James with a question.
So that's great. Go ahead, James.
This is revealing my lack of knowledge of the situation here, but to what extent have these investments been analyzed by Pacifica for, quote, for lack of a better term, political correctness?
No idea. I'm not sure anybody... My first guess would be that they haven't really been looked at lately for a long time, but I could be wrong. Did I hear somebody else wanting to say something?
Yes, I believe, this is Adriana, I believe I never, at least since 2014, I don't remember seeing any of that information at all in the PNU.
But you saw it before 2014?
No, that was
or
my
I think we just sort of rediscovered this fund. We had lost touch with, I guess, Boya. Well, we didn't know who was holding it. There was some disarray. So that's why things are, you know, have been neglected. But I think people were getting a grip on them now between the audits and getting a new third-party administrator. And, yeah, there are people now attending those details and working their way through them. So we can certainly take that into account. I guess that would be something for the new administrative committee of the PNB to be looking at.
This is James with another question.
Go ahead.
Along the lines of, you know, quote unquote political correctness,
uh-huh.
Are we allowed to make choices based on how we feel about, you know, a company's practices? Or because these are employee funds invested for, you know, pension purposes, are we required to just follow the best interests of the employees and select the funds that we hope will perform the best?
Again, for these funds in the 403B plan, you know, an employee, and this happened at the last place I worked, an employee found, like, the one fund that she thought was acceptable and had all her pension funds put into that one investment.
Perhaps that explains why there's so many.
It could explain it. I don't know enough. As far as the investments through the other plan, I don't know, but we can certainly talk to our investment advisor, who is Byron Hancock. We can talk to him about that.
Good. Thank you.
I just learned who these people are, too, and, you know, just getting a grip on it. So, but I think it was a good question, James. And we, being Pacifica, we probably really want to pay attention to that. I had a less interesting question or two. Let me find them. Here we go. I was wondering if, Brad, back to the statement of net assets, the receivable from the employer on the 403B, did you have to calculate in, you know, the gains that would have accrued to the participants' accounts if the funds had been submitted by Pacifica and then invested on time?
We did not do that. We only calculated an estimate of the contributions which were due. We did not accrue any income on it or any lost profits, opportunity, or anything beyond that.
Because I'm wondering how, if that needs to be considered, if these were obligatory contributions, but then people are missing out on what they would have earned?
That's your thought process is correct. And the IRS does that on occasion, they will, well, in the appropriate situation, they will also require that a computation be made of lost earnings. So I'm not sure when, at what point you start that that calculation, but in other words, does it start in October of 17 when that, if assuming that was the last point in time where the contribution should have been funded? I can tell you we didn't do it, but didn't do any computation
right.
At that time. But I think you're correct. There very well may be some additional funds due.
So now, who would I want to take that up with? Our third-party administrator, or our ERISA lawyers, or our investment advisor, or...
All right. The third-party administrator is they are usually the best ones on the technical aspects of operating the plan. That would be where
uh-huh.
I'd go.
Okay, great. I know that they... they haven't taken in, they and the ERISA lawyers and the investment advisor haven't really quite absorbed the 403B plan yet, but I think they have in a sort of informal way. In other words, they've done a lot of documentation of the 401A plan and, you know, assigned trustees and this and that and things. I can't even remember it all, but haven't done the same yet for the 403B, but I think are moving towards that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I will indeed mention it to them as to how to, you know, to get this on their plate, so to speak. Okay, thank you. That's helpful to know. Right. Does anyone have any other questions specifically on this audit?
This is Grace.
Go ahead, Grace.
Okay, first of all, I think we should examine the investments to ensure that to have the option of socially responsible investments if possible.
Okay.
For this, the pension plan. Now, I believe that the sequence would be that we would need a list of all employees who have money set aside for them in the two plans. There's this 403B plan, but there's another pension
mm-hmm.
plan also.
Right.
How much money of the match was put into the plan for them, how much wasn't. And then when we get that done, then we can calculate extra interest for people whose monies were not put in by whatever station in a timely manner. So I think that the sequence
right.
first would be to get all the names of employees who are participating in the plans, then
mm-hmm.
to find out how much there should be in the plan for them, for each employee, and how much, if there is a deficiency for any one of them, how much it is, and
mm-hmm.
then to calculate the back interest. So I think, would that be
right.
the sequence? Am I correct on that?
Partly. I think somebody is working on that. I'm not 100% sure if the third-party administrators would be working on that. Because, Brad, that's not something that you do, right? You don't get down to the individual participant level, correct?
We do test, and some of our testing
right.
will be at the individual
okay.
participant level, but we're not going to
sure.
create, we don't create the all of the detailed accounting schedules which represent the client's records.
The entirety of it,
support,
right.
support the contributions to begin with. And perhaps I
yeah.
could, to if I could address Grace's comment for a minute,
sure.
I'd just like to say that all of the matches that for up through December 31, 2016, all of those were made correctly, and there's nothing due to the plan on the match. The funds which are due to the plan, that amount of $48,153, all of that is related to the one station, KPFK employees, and that's not a match. It's just what they had negotiated, an additional an amount that would be put into the 403B plan on behalf of their employees. So, or the, that were in, or union employees, I guess I'd call it.
The obligatory 1 or 1.5%, right? Yeah.
Paulina, here?
Yeah. Go ahead, Paulina.
The question is the following. So we know that the foundation has this model of carrying out financial operations that avoids having the expenses of having full accounting staff at each station. So basically, you know, we often don't have accountants at member stations because, you know, that's an extra expense. So I would really like to see a map of sorts of who is responsible for, you know, keeping track of accounting at each station. If it's the GM, if it's the business manager, then what, you know, how
yeah.
are those responsibilities shared? And one second.
Paulina, let me interrupt
you.
This is a separate topic. It doesn't really pertain to our call.
You're right. Absolutely. It's more to
Let's
the
get back
to
it a little later.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I was going somewhere. My question is then, right now we're only discussing the 403B pension plan, correct? Where there was another pension plan mentioned. So my question is specifically to Brad is, what's the timeline for getting the detailed results on the other pension plan that needs to be audited? And because I'm new to the committee, how much, how is that maybe preventing us from moving forward with finishing the audit? I just want some little bit more details about the other pension plan that is still in the works.
All right. What we call the 401A plan has a fiscal year end on September 30th, as opposed to the 403B plan, which is on calendar year. Now, the 401A plan has been a bit more challenging to audit. To begin with, that's a full scope audit. There is no qualified custodian of the assets. The assets are being held in a brokerage account. So oftentimes you might think, well, a brokerage account, that seems pretty reasonable. That's what I have for my personal investments or whatever. But for purposes of the Department of Labor, that doesn't meet the standards to have a limited scope audit. So to begin with, that's a full scope audit. Now, the investments are not a problem because we're able to audit those, but there's been, but that audit's been a bit challenging. And some of the challenges have been related to what the information that we have received from, let's say, management, and what we're seeing, and what we've seen in the audited financial statements, the notes to the financial statements of the foundation, for example, or what's been reported on Form 990 for the foundation, and the accruals that we didn't see on the plan financial statements when we looked at the last audited financial statement. The 401A plan audited financial statements from September 30th, 2014 did not include all of the accrued contributions which were described as being due to that plan in the notes to the financial statement of the foundation itself. So when we compared one to the other, we were not matching. And the staff of the foundation seemed to be under the impression that we, the people that we were talking to anyway, under the impression that the board had approved, well, I shouldn't say, maybe I shouldn't say that way, apparently the board had never approved some of the accrued, that's what I should have said, the board had not approved in minutes and board decisions, accrued contributions into the 401A plan for certain years. And that's not clear as to what years and so forth at this point. So there's a lot of, and then with the third-party administrator to the plan resigned. That created, so those issues, and then there was an arbitration an arbitration decision that happened, which seemed to impact the retirement plan. And as an accountant, I was looking at the potential accruals related to that arbitration as being a contingent receivable or a receivable for the plan. But because of all the challenges that were going on, ERISA attorneys were brought in. And when ERISA attorneys sort of looked at some of the draft notes to the financial statements that we were contemplating, they pointed out some of these issues that perhaps the board hadn't approved some contributions that we thought were going to be accrued to the plan. And so we're still resolving some of the issues about what is receivable, what are the receivables of the plan. And there have been some specific observations, or we've had some specific questions about participants and their participation in the plan. That is, this is just normal things that come up where perhaps someone who is included or the computation of what their contribution or what their match was, we were having challenges trying to match what the client had already done. And we were coming up with a different number, and we need to get that resolved. We've got a list of those items sitting with the accountant at the foundation. Unfortunately, I think you're all well aware that the staffing there has been reduced significantly, and so there it's very challenging for the accountant there to try and respond to all the demands that are being presented to them, to her. So,
Brad, how many stations are affected by the issues you're describing, and what is the ballpark figure that it could be in dispute at this point?
Well, I don't know how many stations are involved, and there were I think two stations that had. I think in their collective bargaining agreement called for contributions, and the amount, the potential amounts involved are fairly substantial, $100,000 or more, let's say. And that information that I'm referring to then comes from our initial reading of the notes to the financial statement of the foundation itself, where it describes its obligations to the pension fund, all right, or the pension plan. But those amounts, if there haven't been approved as being due to the plan by the Board of Trustees, Board of the Foundation, then are they truly due to the plan? And that was the issue. And the attorneys have advised that no, they're not, because the collective bargaining agreement is not the controlling factor. It's the plan document. And the plan document doesn't call for the same accruals as what have been accrued on the books.
I understand, but how can you not know which which specific stations are involved. Is it KPFK? Is it KPFT? Is it WVI? I mean, you've looked at the documents.
Well, all of that is, those different stations are laid out and described in the notes to the financial statement. So that information is available.
This is Grace. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Eileen, may I ask the question?
It's germane, I assume?
Is the question germane?
To this topic? Yeah.
Yes, it's germane to the topic.
Okay, because I wasn't sure if Paulina was actually done. Okay.
Ask her if she's done then.
I guess I
she was done.
I'm done.
Paulina,
thank you.
Thank
you so much.
All right. Sorry about that. Okay, go ahead, Grace. Sorry.
Okay, please correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is that the 401A plan is optional, and Pacifica can decide not to fund it if it chooses, probably on an annual basis. However, I believe that Pacifica is obligated to fund it because of the collective bargaining agreements, the union contracts, with two stations, KPFA and KPFK. What I'm not certain about is we have there are stations with no unions or with no agreement about this in their union contract, for instance, possibly WPFW. So if and I believe that the obligations in those union contracts are not the same, but for the plan, they would have to be the same. So I think that's what the negotiation is with the unions at this point, to make sure that the obligations are the same across the network. So what you're saying is that it's possible that the voluntary nature of the plan would override the union contracts?
Well, the clarification would be that the plan document is the controlling document for the plan, and if a collective bargaining agreement has terms in it which are not consistent with the plan document controls. That I'm not the attorney, but this is the way the attorneys have explained it to me. And so that that's why the plan has to be amended, because right up in as the plan document, I don't believe matched with the collective bargaining agreements. It may have matched with one and not the other, or it may not have matched with either one perfectly. So that needed to be resolved, and may still need to be resolved.
Okay, I have a follow-up question. Can I ask it, Eileen?
Go ahead, Grace.
Okay. My next question is this. I have heard that the two plans are redundant and that it may be wise for Pacifica to eliminate the one plan. I assume the one that would be eliminated would be the 401A. Is what I'm thinking correct?
Well, this is to Brad. You're direct to me?
Yes. Yeah.
No? I mean,
yeah.
one.
Go ahead,
one,
Brad. I can also comment.
So one plan, as you said, is a plan that basically is allows the participant to choose if they want to contribute or not. And then there's, obviously, then there's the collective bargaining agreements that may require under their agreements for certain employees to have a contribution made on their behalf. That might be almost like the voluntary contribution the employer makes. And then the other plan was totally voluntary. And I guess, from looking at things from outside, given the financial stress that the foundation seems to be under, that perhaps that voluntary plan, the 401A plan, is really not necessary. You could you could make voluntary contributions into the 403B plan as well. You know, in other words, to offset or make up for anything you would have put in the 401A plan. So you could get by with one plan.
Is James with a question?
Thank
Go ahead, James.
If the if the plan is voluntary according to the if the plan if what the union contract is differing with the structure of the plan, where the plans are theoretically the contributions are voluntary, but contributions to that plan have been subject to negotiations between the union and the foundation, even though it would control where the money would go immediately per the operation of the fund, and you know what the foundation should do, if you use as their guideline for what to do, would that leave us subject at a later time or sooner to a lawsuit from the union because they have a collective bargaining agreement?
Well, I think the union has been negotiating with KPFK and whoever else gets involved in those negotiations. So I think the union is going to end up happy.
That'd be nice.
Wouldn't it be nice? At least in Los Angeles. And what somebody or other, oh, I guess Tom would have said to me, is that what happens in KPFK may well serve as a model for what needs to be done with KPFA. And that's kind of as far as I can go on that. I have not seen any collective, I've never seen a collective bargaining agreement. I don't know what they look like. I'm beginning to think that the other three stations, if they have them, they don't include mention of mandatory contributions. But maybe these two do. It's very confusing, and you know, I think it will all become clear soonish, but isn't yet. But I don't think the union will sue us because they're already getting what they want, at least in Los Angeles.
Thank you.
Okay. And just to speak to the other, to Grace's mentioned that the plans are redundant. They probably are. And I've heard two different versions of what people think is going to happen. One is that to let either one of them disappear as time goes by. You can't combine them because apparently they come under different parts of the IRS law. So you can't just sort of dissolve one and stick all that money into the other. But you can stop putting any new participants into a given plan. And as people retire, they take their money out, and eventually that plan's funds will be gone, and its participants will all be done. So we just stay with another. So somebody's going to have to decide which way to go. I think the 403B is a little more flexible because it lets people also put aside their own money if they want to. So, you know, they can put aside 3% of their salary, and Pacifica would theoretically match that if obligated to do so. But they can also, an employee can put aside 6 or 10 or 100% of their salary if they want to, and that money earns, you know, dividends or interest or whatever you call it. But Pacifica would only match 3% of it, if that's helpful. But we don't know what's going to happen. People still need to be discussing these things once they straighten out what's already happened in both plans. So that would be the next thing. Does anyone have any other questions for Brad? Or Brad, do you have any more comments for us?
No questions? Okay. I'll just mention that the 403B plan does accept rollovers. So if there's someone goes from one plan and they have and they want to move money into that 403B plan, there is a provision for that.
They can accept funds from a 401A or just from another 403B.
Well, I don't know that detail, and it's possible that that could be the hang-up.
I think it might be, according to what somebody else told me.
Okay.
But that is helpful to take into account. Okay, if nobody has any other questions, we could let Brad go and do something else with his evening. Okay, none heard. Brad, thank you so much for coming on our call.
You're very welcome.
And,
thank you.
We'll be inviting you back for the next audit you finish for us, I guess.
Very good.
That'll be the first one would be 2015 audit of the 401A. Is that right, Brad?
What was the question?
Yeah, is the next audit that you would produce, would that be for 2015 of the 401A?
Yeah,
and then after
that
you would do 2016, or do you do both at once?
Well, we're progressing.
2 year.
We wanted to get the September 30th, 2015 done first, and then progress through to the next one.
Oh, okay.
So
you can't do like a cumulative 2 year. Okay. All right, that's helpful. Thank you. Adriana, did
Adriana?
I hear you?
Yes.
Go ahead, Adriana.
Before he leaves, do we have an idea when the final audit will be for the pension plan?
We saw
a draft, right? But you think that...
Oh, this is the 403B. Yeah, we have... I think we're just waiting to finalize it, right?
As far as the 403D, so you have the draft, and then I also sent you the representation letter, or perhaps it was to Tom. And so
he sent it to me, I think. Mm-hmm.
All right. Once the committee, whatever process you need to do to approve it, whether you can approve it or whether you have to go to the board now with your recommendation to approve it, I don't know.
Yeah.
But as soon as you're satisfied with it and you sign off on the representation letter, return it to me, then we will finalize that audited financial statement and provide it to you so that it can be filed with the Form 5500.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. I'm sure other people besides us know about that. That part, what happens after we sign off. So, okay, thank you.
I have another quick question.
Go.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And that is any estimated time that the 401A plan will be audited, that audit will be complete?
I cannot give you a time commitment on that. Problem right now are various open issues, and I don't really know when they're going to get resolved. I wish I could be definitive, but this is dragged on a bit, and I know that my impression is that the staffing at the office is very slim, and there's not a lot of resources available to provide assistance to this audit process.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry I don't have an answer for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Brad. Just, stay in touch and keep us posted.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
Good evening.
Thanks. You take care. Good night.
Good night.
Okay. Let's see. Where are we? All right, that was helpful. I hope that helps clarify some things. And I think we got some good questions out of it to follow up on. So before that, we were discussing how NETA was taking over some of the local accounting, and Grace was helping pull out some of the points from NETA's original document. However, time is racing by, so I don't know how much time we want to spend on all this.
Eileen?
Yes, Grace. Uh-huh.
I'd like to suggest that we get to my motion. It's pretty straightforward.
Yes. Okay. Let me see. I have that. Yes, I think that's fine. Let me read it. Or do you want? Why don't you read it, Grace? Unless you'd like me to, either way.
Right. You can read it if you like.
I don't. Either way, like I said, where did I put it? I saved it. I saved it somewhere else. Okay, let me look at it. Okay, here's Grace's motion. Whereas the 2017 audit completion has been delayed until the end of November 2018, whereas none of our stations or units have credible approved budgets, whereas the National Finance Committee has not received income statements and balance sheets for the foundation in a timely manner, whereas we are out of compliance with the settlement loan covenant due to lack of financial reports and audits, whereas Pacifica's nonprofit status is at risk, is it? Oh, well, okay. Whereas NETA, the firm that Pacifica hired to take over accounting functions, stated in the last National Finance Committee meeting on September 18th, 2018, that they need more timely responses to their requests for information. And whereas the audit committee is responsible for ensuring that the audits are prepared in a timely fashion, therefore, be it resolved that the audit committee requests that the Pacifica National Board instruct the ED to ensure that all requests for information, somebody's breathing into their mouthpiece, if you could not do that, thank you, to ensure that all requests for information from NETA and our audit firm, Rogers & Company, be a top priority for all stations and units. Further, that stations that don't have the resources to do their own accounting outsource that work to NETA until such time as they are able to get up to date on all accounting and maintain current accounting functions in compliance with past audit recommendations, and further, that the expense of the outsourcing be borne by the stations and added to their budgets.
I second, Adriana.
Thank you, Adriana. I'm not sure if we, do you think we need that last sentence about the bookkeeping since it's sort of in progress? I guess it doesn't hurt to leave it.
Which part?
Where it says that the stations that don't have the resources to do their own accounting outsource their work to NETA.
No, I think that that's necessary. Can I respond to that?
Yes, please do.
Okay, NETA suggested this. The cost of it, according to past estimates for accounting staff of the caliber needed for the accounting at WBAI and Washington, D.C., the hourly rate is extremely expensive in those locales. NETA is located in North Carolina.
South Carolina.
Okay, so we're probably the wage scale for accounting staff, seasoned accounting staff, is lower.
I would guess that.
And the, mm-hmm. the quote that NETA gave for taking over the business manager functions at the station, I thought was very reasonable. That can be adjudicated by the ED in coordination with NETA and with the National Finance Committee. However, it makes no sense to delay our audits waiting for these stations to hire their own staff and get the staff up to speed, et cetera, et cetera.
I
don't
see.
Think it
yeah.
makes any sense, especially since if there's any chance of retrieving any CPP funding, any minor extra expense, which I don't think there would even be any extra expense, would be overshadowed by the loss of CPP and other grant funding and the possible loss of our nonprofit status if we don't get our financial reports in a timely fashion to the California Registry of Charitable Trusts and the IRS. So
right.
I think if the stations want to take it over, they're going to have to do it very rapidly and show that they can get information to NETA quickly when they're asked for it. Does that make sense? So I'd like to leave this in.
Okay. No, my comment was because I know that WPFW is already planning to do that and will use at least some of the funding. I don't know what the respective amounts are, but, you know, what we've been paying for Barry Brook to do in Los Angeles, then we wouldn't have to pay that amount to Los Angeles, but could use it for NETA. I don't know if it's, near.
Madam Chair,
New York would have a different situation since it's their ED that's been doing their books. But you know, maybe you know, they might benefit from having him do other things. Adriana,
Madam Chair, yes, we need to be careful not to mention names. We are in open session.
Sure. Yes. Okay.
But
yeah,
I agree with Grace. This will give a sense of urgency that is needed. And it's not only the stations that don't have personnel, because we know that some of the stations that have the personnel doesn't have the staff ready either. I mean, that will open for all of them if they cannot comply, they cannot get things on time. They should pay for the cost, obviously. Yes.
No, this is fine. I personally utterly agree with all of it. Should we take a vote? Do we need to vote on this?
If anybody objects first.
Are there any objections to this motion? None heard? The motion passes. I will perform a few little line edits, just like, you know, I'll move where you have the link to the audio, I'll put it at the bottom, you know, and I would change the word delayed in the first sentence to postponed, if that's okay. Audit completion has been postponed?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. So I can do this and send it to the PNB this week. Are they meeting this week?
Yes, and it would be very good if you got it to them.
I'll make sure to get it to them before that. Okay, great. Motion passed. Let's see. What else do we need to discuss tonight? Oh, there's a general audit question. That's all that we've really specified on this audit. I mean, on tonight's agenda.
Madam Chair, Paulina, with a point of information.
Yes, Paulina.
Just wanted to say thank you to everybody, and I am signing off as I have work right now at 7, so have a good night. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Paulina.
All right.
You too. Okay. I think we should move to our closed session. I think we have a few short items to discuss there.
I move that we adjourn the open session and move into closed session.
All right.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Before that, can we decide the next meeting date? Because we
good idea. Yes. Today's the first. Do we want to meet in 2 weeks or three? I think the auditors were hoping to visit at least the national office and maybe some others to do their field work, possibly the week of the 15th, but it may get put off a week. Why don't we plan to meet on the 15th just to be safe in case there are things we have to take up? I think we'd want to follow up on what happens with this motion and to see if we can figure out, you know, who's working according to plan and who needs, you know, who needs to be, what's the word I want? Motivated? You know, what stations need a little help or more encouragement. Does everybody agree with 2 weeks from now?
Yes.
Then post it August 15th, okay? Open
That's
station.
Right. Let's do our usual, the plan for an open and a closed in case we need the closed. Okay.
Okay, perfect.
All right. So this meeting is adjourned at 10:03.